Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box. Last week, I said that there's a beautiful cafe in every small town in New Zealand, and the small town of question this week is Cable Bay, which is just north of Nelson, and we had a very lovely lunch at the Cable Bay Cafe. We'll probably put a couple of pictures in the show notes for those who are interested. You have the very New Zealand rural aspect of a bull just hanging out in the paddock over the road and an honesty box for honey. If you wanted honey, I'm sorry, it's probably hard for me to bring back to America in my luggage, but it would have been a nice thought.
Been to any great meetups recently?
I was the invited guest at the Kubernetes Auckland meetup last week. I sort of invited myself because I was speaking at the DevOps Talks conference earlier that week, and I came along and said, I had a great chat here last year. I'd love to come and talk to you about Knative. And I chatted with the audience there. I must say, I did a very risky thing. I'm pretty sure you've told me not to do this, but I asked the audience, how many of you listen to this here podcast? And I was very pleasantly surprised by the number of hands that went up. So there were a number of stickers given away. Thank you very much to everyone who came. I'd like to think that everyone there who didn't put their hand up is now a subscriber, and we'll see you all next time.
That sounds great. I've not gotten a chance to get out as much, but had a chance to actually start enjoying a read this week. I am most of the way through at this point, a Dan Brown novel following in kind of the footsteps of the Da Vinci Code, which I also enjoyed, more recent book called Origins, and true to form, it's hooked my interest.
How is renowned author Dan Brown these days?
Well, I can't speak for him personally, but his writing certainly is engaging.
Yes, I remember buying the Da Vinci Code in an airport, and I think that's where he fits in my literary filing system. He's definitely an airport kind of guy.
Yeah. If you got something you need to kind of pass some time, it's a catchy story. He writes it well.
We're getting ready for our live show at Google Cloud Next with our special guest, Professor Eric Brewer. It's now only 1 week away. For our listeners, we'll have a regular episode next Tuesday. The live show will be recorded on Wednesday, and you'll get to hear it in the regular time the week afterwards. If you're lucky enough to be going to Next in person, there's a link in the show notes to register for the live show. Please make sure to sign up to make sure you get a space. You'll be able to walk up on the day if the room isn't full, but with a wonderful speaker and fantastic hosts, we wouldn't want anyone to be disappointed.
Last week, we announced we had a small number of Next tickets to give away. We had such a great response, and so many of you had written back, that we went back to the Next team and managed to get another 10 codes. Congratulations to our lucky winners. You'll get an email from us in the next day or so. We'll also be recording a bunch of interviews at Next, so if you're going to be there and you work on something you think might be interesting to our listeners, please email us at kubernetespodcast@google.com to let us know.
Let's get to the news. After almost 3 years and 35 releases, Minikube, the VM service for running Kubernetes locally or in CI environments, has hit 1.0. The project has been stable for some time and decided to rev the version number after dependencies Cryo and KubeADM were similarly stable. If you want to learn more about Minikube, listen to our interview with maintainer emeritus Dan Lawrence in episode 39. To celebrate this release, Ihor Dvoretsky, developer advocate for the CNCF and guest on show 21, has started a series of articles on deployment options for Kubernetes on Linux, with Minikube as his first suggestion.
Uber have open-sourced Peloton, the cluster management system they announced in November. Peloton is currently used in production at Uber for many kinds of batch workloads, and they are planning to migrate stateless services to it as well. The Uber team has been teasing Kubernetes integration and say they're working with the project on what integration would look like.
The first service mesh day was held by Tetrate in San Francisco last week, so we bring you plenty of service mesh news. Payments company Square wrote a blog post this week outlining their journey to adopting Envoy. They started down a Google-like route, building their own gRPC-alike framework called Sake before gRPC was released. Looking to how they could move logic out of this framework and into a sidecar model, the gRPC support in Envoy bought them an option and a reason to migrate, and they built a control plane based on their Zookeeper service discovery system. The migration will continue through 2019, and the story is worth reading if you have an interest in how service mesh technology works. Do be careful, though, because at Service Mesh Day, they said that they gave app developers the ability to manage traffic flow, and one of them accidentally took down their internal SSO portal.
AWS App Mesh, their proprietary Envoy-based service mesh, went GA last week. No new features were announced, though an API change was made earlier this month to simplify the virtual router and listening model. Support for the Istio Mixer is now listed as upcoming.
Tetrate, host of Service Mesh Day, announced Tetrate Q, a new take on access control for modern infrastructure. It's based on the next-generation access control model and encompasses the global state of a system, services, data, and users. Q draws information from the service registry and existing identity management systems to tell a service mesh whether a particular user should have access to a particular object at a particular time. All that said, there's not yet enough information to really narrow down what it does or where it plugs in, so we'll let you know as we learn more. No word on if John Delancey will be making an appearance.
Google Cloud continues its Istio blog series with a fifth article, this one written by developer programs engineer Megan O'Keefe. In this posting, Megan talks about building a hybrid service mesh across two clusters in the same environment, think dev test and production, or two meshes across two clusters in different environments, think hybrid from on-prem to the cloud. She also covers adding VMs to the service mesh. The series is supported with code demos as well to help you build a similar environment or just to test it out, helping bring everyone closer to the hybrid deployments of the future.
Speaking of hybrids, the Open Tracing and Open Census projects this week announced their intention to merge. The two projects are very similar in that they aim to unify app instrumentation and make observability a built-in feature in every modern application. Open Tracing through distributed tracing and Open Census through metrics. A team formed of members of both projects has been looking at the technical viability of a merger for some time, and the change will be done in a fashion that is not disruptive to people using either project. It does mean that the number of CNCF projects will take a rare downward turn, and the combined project is already looking for a new Greek name.
We now return to your regularly scheduled Kubernetes security announcement. Two vulnerabilities this week, a directory traversal in the kubectl cp command rated as high, and in the portmap plugin for the container network interface rated medium. Look to upgrade if you use either feature or make sure that your vendor is keeping you secure.
The Deis acquisition continues to be the open source innovation hub for Microsoft, with Azure announcing Brigade 1.0 from that team. A CNCF sandbox project that is described as a tool for running scriptable automated tasks in the cloud as part of your Kubernetes cluster, Brigade gives you a way to use JavaScript to string together multiple steps in a similar fashion to AWS step functions, but running in Kubernetes and open source.
Yongkung Guy from Google posted a blog this week on debugging kubeproxy. He recently dug into kubeproxy after seeing some intermittent connection resets, and his blog dives into what he learned. It explains one particular problem, but this post really shines in helping you understand how kubeproxy works generally.
Interested to know more about the 1.14 Kubernetes release from last week? Members of the 1.14 release team are running a webinar on April the 23rd, 10 a.m. Pacific time, to talk about the major new features. You can find the registration link in the show notes.
Curious to know more about being a community ambassador? Couldn't get your fill of Paris Pittman from show number one? You're in luck. The CNCF has published an interview with Paris along with an accompanying video. You can hear more about how Paris got involved in Kubernetes and her thoughts on where the community is going.
Finally, are you looking to scale your Kubernetes deployment and want to learn from those who have done it at a massive scale? Reda Benzer, CNCF ambassador and VP of engineering at Streamroot, has posted a blog with key tips on how to do massive scale with Kubernetes. He offers four main tips for being successful with your scaling, and these could help you be prepared for the future.
And that's the news. Kim Lewandowski is a product manager for Google Cloud, working on the Tecton project. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you, Adam.
Congratulations on the recent release. For those that are listening, can you help them understand what is Tecton?
Tecton is a new open source project from Google that we recently announced at Open Source Leadership Summit a few weeks ago. So the name Tecton was inspired by a Greek word, tekton. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, which means artisan or craftsman, or so I'm told. So we also, of course, like the name because there's a K in it, and everything Kubernetes related needs a K, including my name. Mm-hmm. So going back to what it is, so Tecton is a set of building blocks for building continuous integration and continuous delivery systems. You commonly hear the acronym CI/CD for this space. So Tecton itself runs on Kubernetes, but it will deploy code anywhere, whether that is Kubernetes itself, bare metal, IoT devices, mobile, etc.
Is it an application?
It's really a platform. The idea being it's a lower level platform in which more applications and layers will be built on top of it.
Gotcha. I've heard people talk about a relationship between Tecton and the Knative project. Can you talk about how those two are related?
Tecton really started out in Knative repo. It was originally called Knative Pipelines. It will continue to support the Knative ecosystem as a first class target. and Tecton pipelines will deploy to Knative environments. We decided to split this out from the Knative repo to make it clear to users that this was always intended to be independently useful from the rest of Knative and not the only way to deploy to Knative. So like I said, we have a lot of other deployment targets that we're looking to support, and not just Knative itself and not just Kubernetes itself. And there's a lot of people still running on legacy systems and still talking to bare metal and, you know, still need to solve the CI/CD problem no matter where they're running.
So is this a forked set of code out of the Knative project, or are you shifting the code from the Knative project into Tecton and then Knative will build on top of it?
Yeah, so we shifted the code right out. It's in a new repo on GitHub/TectonCD. The build concept still exists in Knative, and that's always kind of been a part of it. And that still remains in Knative today.
Why was Tecton created? Why did this need to be a separate project?
We've spent a lot of time talking to customers and developers about how they practice CI/CD of their organizations and how they're modernizing their current infrastructure. And what we constantly heard is that they're struggling to modernize and make tooling decisions for their CI/CD workflows. And there's just so many to choose from. But the goal with all these tools is always the same, like help us get our source code from source code to production as fast and securely as possible. So for Tecton, we took a step back and really asked ourselves if we could do kind of the same thing that Kubernetes did with containers to CI/CD. So that is, like, could we collaborate with industry leaders in the open to define a course of building blocks in which CI/CD systems could then be built on top of, and existing ones could be refactored onto. And so this is how kind of the Tecton project was born.
Gotcha. So when you think about the CI/CD, you know, pipeline ecosystem, what particular problems within that does Tecton solve?
Its goal is really to establish agreed upon specifications and guidelines common to these CI/CD systems, and really provide these building blocks which developers can plug and play which components and tool they want to use. So it really gives them the benefits of having portable workflows that can run faster and are declarative and reproducible. And it allows interoperability between a lot of the different systems that you see out there today.
So it sounds a little bit kind of like, I'd almost think of this as like a network specification or interface specification of how things can work together. Is that a correct way to think about it?
Yeah, kind of. If we can all agree on like what the nouns are and what those components are, like a pipeline versus like what's a task in a pipeline, what are the results that a pipeline spits out, the artifacts that they produce. And so once we agree on kind of those specifications, then all these toolings that become Tecton conformant, they can all kind of talk to each other. So as an end customer developer, I could, if I'm using a system over here, maybe it's Jenkins, and then I hear about something new, I can plug and play all these different components to get the solution that I need by still maintaining like that portability feature and having things that are reproducible as well.
So it's like a framework and a specification.
Yes.
Gotcha. I'll see if I can throw some more buzzwords out there. So what technologies does Tecton work with? You mentioned that it's kind of this underlying specification. So what tools can or do already build on top of this?
So Tecton's a fairly new project, but we do have a few different projects that have already started to integrate with it. So the folks at CloudBees have a demo of Jenkins X and even legacy Jenkins kind of using Tecton pipelines underneath. And there's another team, another company called Trigger Mesh, who have just recently demoed a project that they're calling Trigger Mesh Actions, actions with a K.
Of course.
Which can take a GitHub action and convert it into a Tecton workflow, which then can be run on your own Kubernetes cluster if you choose.
So if this is kind of an underlying framework for these pieces, is there a reason not to just go use those tools themselves? Is this something for us end developers to go and build off of? Or is this something that people who are making the CI/CD tools to build on top of and will kind of be transparent to those of us who are just building our own code pipelines?
Yeah, exactly. It's the latter of that. So Tecton is really the abstraction layer kind of beneath the CI/CD tools that most will interact with. So we envision most customers will be using these tools that are a layer above. And that's the kind of the beauty of it all, is that when these tools are Tecton conformant, that we can mix and match different ones and different plugins and have them all work together.
Cool. Why is there no single best practice on how to deploy apps to Kubernetes?
I think some of us wish there was. But, you know, in honesty, it's not really a one size fits all space. There are sets of best practices that apply to different customers and different scenarios. So startups iterating on an MVP do not need or even want the same kind of rigor that a bank or a large insurance company might need.
What would be some of the examples of different ways that people are doing that today that you need to think about as you're building a framework that sits underneath these tools?
So for startups, you know, it's common that they just push on master. So everything, every code commit, they just roll it out to production and there you have it. But, you know, large enterprises, they have such strong security rules in their pipelines and everything and want to make sure that, you know, they want to know who built what code, how did it get built, what versions is the software running, how do I trace back, you know, what's running in production all the way back to the source code from it with versioning. And so, yeah, a lot more rigor around their processes.
And Tecton is not opinionated about how people construct those pieces, correct?
Correct. I think when we see these projects and tools built on top of Tecton, we'll all see a bit of opinionation above to really help end users guide them along, you know, kind of what they think is the best practice for getting the job done that they're doing.
Do you think over the long term, eventually there will become a standard that people will lock to for that? Or do you think it will always be a heterogeneous environment?
I mean, we're going towards, you know, our visions to have a common set of guidelines that people can follow. That's the goal and that's the vision. I think it'll be a long time before we can get everything along those lines. I think we'll always see kind of unique snowflakes out there that need to do something their own way with lots and lots of bash scripting. But hopefully we can all kind of move in the same direction and not keep reinventing the wheel every week.
Recently, there was a blog post that people were looking at that was called In Defense of YAML. Yeah. It was saying that it doesn't matter the sense to define pipeline steps in YAML, that YAML is a language for structured configuration and pipeline steps are basically programming. What's your opinion on that?
Okay, yeah, I think I know which article you're talking about. So I think it made a lot of great points that YAML and like anything else in software can be overused or used in places where it just doesn't make sense. Still, though, it does serve an important need as a universal data language. So it's accessible from all programming languages. And this is how we see Tecton's YAML being used. So pipeline steps do represent simple programs, but we've explicitly designed it not to be Turing complete. So we don't support handling things like self-mutating pipelines, loops, recursions, etc. We think that this makes pipelines predictable, understandable, and maintainable. And that's the boundary, helps make the YAML more palatable.
And is that a goal that you have? Are those kind of pillars of your design that you will never do those things? Or could you make a more Turing-complete language part of the code that you're doing later on?
I think this will be the design we stick with. But again, I'm not the engineer, so...
Learning never to say never.
Right.
It feels like a good call in technology. Sure. So Tecton was announced and the repo is available right now. What's next for Tecton?
Like I hinted at before, a lot of our work right now is on our Tecton pipelines. So we've been working with folks like from CloudBees, Pivotal, IBM. We have a bunch of new features in the works. And we hold weekly meetings on Tuesday mornings where we discuss features and design. And so we're working through a lot of that. And we started designing more of the Tecton core components as well, such as like source code access and artifact storage. And we're also really excited to start exploring more of like helping the security problems that I had touched on earlier. So a lot of larger customers are just coming and like looking for best practices, looking for ways that they can make sure that their software supply chains are secure and they are meeting audit requirements and everything. So this is one area that we're particularly excited about and excited to start getting working on soon.
You've mentioned a number of partners who are working with you on the Tecton project and helping to build on top of that. Which partners would you love to have join you in this?
All of them. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people in the CI/CD space. So we would love the large cloud providers to join us. You know, a lot of the things that we're trying to do, I think we can only do it when everyone's working towards the same goals and vision. So we're welcoming everyone.
Speaking of those who might be interested, if listeners want to get more involved with Tecton, where can they go to learn more and where can they go to contribute to the project?
So glad you asked. So Tecton is now actually owned by a new Linux foundation called the Continuous Delivery Foundation. And the Continuous Delivery Foundation is kind of like a sister foundation to the CNCF, if you're familiar with that foundation. Mm-hmm. So there are a few different ways you can get involved. So if you're interested in continuous delivery and just want to follow along with everything that's happening in this space. And I encourage you to check out the new CDF Foundation. And there's a website, it's cd.foundation, which I thought was pretty cool that we were able to secure that domain. So there's a membership process similar to the CNCF where you can simply like sign up for the mailing list and just be like an end user and follow along. And then for Tecton specifically, the best way to get involved is really to check out our community and contributing page. And so we have a GitHub repo. Probably the easiest way to find the GitHub repo link is go to tecton.dev, which will redirect you there. And you'll find more information there about our working group meetings, Slack channel, things like that. If you're around at GCP Next, a bunch of us will be floating around the conference as well. So.
Well, thank you. This is great information. I appreciate you coming on the show today, Kim.
Sure. Thank you, Adam.
You can find Kim Lewandowski on Twitter at KimsterV, KimsterV. Thanks for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at KubernetesPodcast.com where you can find show notes and transcripts, as well as that link to sign up for the Kubernetes Podcast live show at Google Cloud Next. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.